I'm Dr. Leif Tapanola from the Idaho Museum of Natural History, and I'm here with Peter Pruitt from Zoo Idaho, and this is The Nature of Idaho. Coming to you from the 1B, Bannock County that is, we're talking all about Idaho, its wild places and wild faces, the natural setting that makes Idaho an incredible place to live and be proud of. Our guest today is Scott Coburg. He's director of Ada County Parks and Waterways. Peter, today we're talking about Victory Wetland, and it's just outside of Boise, Idaho. I don't know if you've been there yet.
No, I haven't been there. But what really brought my attention to Victory Wetland is, simply put, this is a public access wetland. People can get to it. And when you think about wetlands across Idaho and other states, they tend to be in more secluded areas that not right. easy to get to. And this is a fantastic opportunity for the community of Boise and Ada County to really experience wetlands.
Oh, that's great. And this is part of a bigger theme of how do cities interact with their water, especially surface water, their rivers and wetlands. And I think this is a really important topic for anybody, you know, living out in Idaho cities. We all have rivers in our backyard. And how do we deal with that natural environment, and especially when it interfaces with people's houses and
yep.
and roadways and all that kind of stuff? So we'll dig into that in a little bit. But first, Peter, you got some nature in the news.
Right. We're going to talk about the Cumulative Adversity Index. And this typically is for humans, and it quantifies measures of hardship, including poverty and stress in early life. And it's used to help understand the health and longevity over the course of a human's life. So basically, it is looking at early life stressors okay. and how that affects humans as they age. And if it's a cumulative effect, if you can kind of remove some of those stressors from early on and such.
Okay. Cumulative Adversity Index. And obviously, less adversity is better, I would assume,
right.
for
yep.
your life.
Yep.
Okay.
And of course, it's never really been done with animals, even though animals do experience early life stressors and adversity. And the reason why they really haven't been able to look at this is because it takes a whole lot of data.
Oh,
and
to test the stress of animals.
Yes, yes.
Okay,
and,
sure.
and to get some significant information out of there.
Yeah.
But lucky for all of us, the Rocky Mountain Biological Laboratory in Colorado has 62 years of continuous data.
On what?
For our favorite critter in Pocatello, the yellow-bellied marmot.
Oh, the rockchuck.
Also known as rockchuck, yes. So we had that. There's a UCLA doctoral student who went through all that data and identified the following ecological, demographic, and maternal measures of adversity. Some results are quite obvious. Others were a little bit surprising. So late start for the growing season, summer droughts, predation pressure, litter sizes, male biased litters, late weaning, poor maternal mass, as in the weight of the mother prior okay. to birth.
Sure.
High maternal stress and maternal loss.
And they've been tracking this for
62 years. Yeah,
years.
There's
okay.
plenty of data out there.
Gotcha.
And there was, and the data really does state that a CIA, Cumulative Adversity Index, does work for animals as well. And some of the results were, you know, increased adversity. For instance, the summer drought didn't have as much effect on adversity as a late growing season.
Oh.
Yeah. And then maternal loss, it didn't matter whether it was pre or post weaning, because baby marmots stay with the parents for at least a year.
Okay.
And so you still had significant adversity if the mother died after the pups were weaned.
Okay.
So what they also found, too, is that if a marmot later in adult life experienced a bunch of positive aspects or effects, it didn't cancel out
the
negatives from their early life. And that's actually really similar to the CIA indexes for humans. Positive effects later on in life didn't cancel out all the negative adverse effects in
earlier
childhood,
in
yeah.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to imagine these folks in Colorado over presumably many people over 62 years are paying attention to these marmot groups. What's a collective noun for marmot? It's not a murder of marmots. It's a bunch of marmots. Sure.
Yeah.
So they're watching these animals and they're scoring. You know, is their maternal weight loss? Are there predators? Mm-hmm. Are there this and that? I wonder what is the greatest stress factor on a rock chuck.
You know, that would be awesome too to know. Hmm. And to me, it's just amazing that, you know, this is pure science going on. For 62 years, they've been collecting all kinds of data. And just to come up with this idea about an adversity index for animals.
Right. And that's not just a factor that only affects humans, right?
It
extends to any animal. And it's just a matter of, like, someone would actually have to make those observations in order to characterize it.
Yeah.
Right?
And with science, we can make these assumptions and go, well, yeah, of course this is going to happen, but you need to get the data
until
first.
Somebody actually does the hard work and tracks it. That's really interesting. Well, so should we treat our rock chucks better?
I think that's an individual choice there, Leif. We'll leave it to...
I'm not going to put you on the spot.
No. It's an individual choice. So there you go.
I love it. Today's trivia has to do with Victory Wetland in Ada County. When did the Victory Wetland open to the public? Well, when we come back from the break, we're going to talk about Victory Wetland and other water resources out there in Ada County when Scott Coburg joins us right after the break. So stay tuned.
Hi, I'm Mary Louise Kelly. Here at NPR, we try to reach all kinds of listeners.
My name is Leo, and I'm 8 years old.
And we take feedback very seriously.
I never hear much about nature or dinosaurs or things like that.
So when Leo wrote us about our appalling lack of dinosaur coverage on All Things Considered, we knew we had to talk to him. Hi, Leo.
Hi.
I hear from your parents that you want to be a paleontologist when you grow up, and now we've got one on the line for you.
Okay.
Let me let you ask a question.
How did dinosaurs grow to be so big?
This is hard-hitting journalism because these are the types of questions that keep paleontologists up at night.
In public radio, we value our relationship with each and every one of our listeners. You listen to us, and we listen to you too. So keep our connection strong. Donate to this station right now. Here's how.
You know who covers dinosaurs really well? The Nature of Idaho on KISU. Support NPR and KISU programs by visiting KISU.org and click donate.
Hey, welcome back from the break. Our guest today is Scott Coburg. He's the director of Ada County's Parks and Waterways. So first off, thanks for being and welcome to the Nature of Idaho.
Yeah, thank you for having me. A pleasure to be here.
Well, why don't you tell us, Scott, a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Sure thing. So I'm Scott Coburg, the director of Ada County Parks and Waterways. And of the several parks we manage here in and around Ada County, surrounding the communities of Boise, Meridian, Star, Garden City, and Cuna, you know, we manage Barber Park. We're probably most known for managing Barber Park. It happens to be the launch point for floating the Boise River in the summer. So a lot of people from all over, really all over the world now, come to do that activity. It's surprising. We've done some license plate counts and identification. On any given weekend, in the busiest weekends, we've counted 46 different states in the country.
Wow.
Just on like a 2-day period of time now. So no longer just kind of a locals only thing floating the river. And we also manage several other open space and trail properties and trailheads here, including the bike park in conjunction with the city of Eagle out in Eagle. We manage a good portion of the Ada County Greenbelt pathway. And then also the waterways part of our name is related to management of dock strings up at Lucky Peak Lake, just to the east of us here. And it actually, Lucky Peak Lake covers portions of 3 counties, 2 others in addition to Ada County. And so we have 100 dock strings up there for public recreation and access.
You mean you guys are busy then?
We are busy. I'll tell you what, we have a small but mighty team, and we do a lot for the community here and a lot for visitors from outside of the area. So we are busy. We're coming off our kind of busiest season just because, you know, floating the river has become such a kind of a pastime for everybody. It's on everybody's bucket list. And our office happens to be our headquarters for Ada County Parks and Waterways is right in the middle of Barber Park. And so we're surrounded by masses of humanity excited to float the river for about 60 to 70 days every summer.
I thought he was going to say, so every break we have the opportunity to float down the river. But I guess, can you get it done in 15 minutes? I don't know.
No, you'd be surprised how infrequently all my team floats the river. But we do definitely see a lot of happy faces and people getting ready to do it.
That's great. So we've got you here to talk about the Victory Wetland. Can you kind of tell us a little bit about what the Victory Wetland is? And then we can kind of, after that, go backwards and talk about its formation and how you guys kind of put that all together.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I didn't even mention in the intro there that the Victory Wetland is one of the probably the most unique little park and access area that we do manage for the citizens. And what it is it's about a 4-acre, almost like a pocket park now. What's unique about it is it's not just a typical green park with a swing set and playground or anything like that. What it contains is a sediment retention basin for stormwater runoff from the neighboring community and surrounding homes and streets. And that stormwater basin is on a creek that, or a stream or a drain, depending on what part of Idaho you're in. And just directly downstream from that sediment retention basin, which is intended to drop the heavier kind of particulates and gunky stuff from your stormwater drains and street gutters, drops that to the bottom of that basin. And then there's a little weir structure, basically a pour over where the water rises up and pours over into a series of wetland cells or little wetland basins. And what that does is it's a planted wetland system, several tiers, several drops down in that basin system. And it actually has plants that pull out even more pollutants that would be potentially polluting the Boise River downstream, because this fixture is on a tributary to the Boise River. And so you have this system that treats stormwater in more of a demonstration manner. It does practically do that, cleans the stormwater a bit before it discharges downstream. And then it also allows the public access to it through a walking path and some kiosks there with some educational and outreach information about what exactly this thing is. So anybody can visit, walk around the site, park and walk around the site and learn about water quality in the lower Boise River watershed and what these things, the components of the site, are doing to help improve water quality.
Right. So I pulled up the map of where it's located, and it's, you know, it's a few miles, what, south of I-84?
That's right. Yeah, it's kind of south of I-84. It's surrounded now. At the time, it wasn't sort of in Boise City limits. When it was built, it was unincorporated Ada County. It's been now kind of absorbed and built up around it. And at the time it was built, it was the homes directly adjacent to it were brand new. And it was an area that wasn't just like any other subdivision. It was going to be treated like here it is, here's a stormwater retention basin. It's kind of a requirement to have these when you're developing an area. And it wasn't going to be anything too fancy. But thankfully, it became something a little bit different for a variety of reasons, due to the hard work and kind of insightfulness of some of the folks involved and some of the agencies involved, and cooperating with the homeowners too.
No, I think foresight is so important on a project like this, because it's a restoration project. It takes time for all the vegetation to grow in. It takes time for everything to get into its proper place and working order. And so to be able to do this years back, knowing full well that it's going to take time, has been fantastic. And so was it just luck, or how did this idea come up?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I'll try to give you the short version of the story, but to cover all the pages. At this time, this is about 1995 when this idea came to, and it was initiated by the Meridian USDA Natural Resources Conservation Service and the Ada Soil and Water Conservation District. So all throughout Idaho, there are NRCS field offices, and all throughout Idaho, there are conservation districts. They emphasize natural resource protection and typically work in agricultural communities before working in suburban or urban communities. Well, in 1995, this particular field office here, Meridian, realized that growth was happening at a pretty rampant pace even then. And, you know, started to think about, well, who will our customers be? Who will we be serving as farmland transitions to suburban or urban land? And right at that same time, there was a lot of emphasis on water quality in our rivers and lakes throughout Idaho. There was a federal regulation, the Clean Water Act was being kind of resurrected from the 70s. And there was a lot of emphasis on what's called total maximum daily loads, TMDLs. Not to get too deep in the weeds, but basically what that was telling communities was, hey, you know, there's only so much our rivers and lakes can handle for all kinds of pollutants, sediment, phosphorus, bacteria, those kinds of things. So there was this kind of a threshold that was set for all these lakes and rivers. Well, what this field office decided to do was they decided to make essentially a demonstration of what can be done to improve water quality on a tributary to the river, not in an agricultural community, but just to treat the actual water itself. And so they began with collaborating with the County Highway District, Ada County Highway District, because they're responsible for some of the stormwater runoff from roads. The county commissioners for Ada County were involved. At that time, that field office said, well, somebody's got to manage this in the end. And that's where Ada County Parks and Waterways came in. They needed somebody to figure out what does public access look like once this thing is built out, and who is going to actually be the shepherd of this site if we actually can make it something special.
Let me just get a picture of how do people interact with this and access? You talked about public access to this space. How does a person engage with this space?
Yeah, it's a great question. So people can access this site from a parking lot area, small parking lot area. Buses can access this area. It has a turnabout in it off of the main road. So it's on the corners of 5 Mile and Victory Roads here, or right near the intersection of 5 Mile and Victory Roads. And at that site, there's a walking path with a kiosk that introduces you right to the location, introducing you to a site map, and has some features like a garbage can and a mutt mitt dispenser for disposing of dog poop. And then on the opposite end, same thing as a north and south access. The north access is more neighborhood access, so folks from the surrounding neighborhoods could walk right in, and they're just tied into a nice concrete pathway that sort of circumnavigates the wetland system, and along the way tells you the story of what you're seeing from a habitat standpoint, what you're seeing, why habitat in an urban environment is important, what shallow marshes do for habitat in an urban area, because shallow marsh habitat is kind of an unusual thing to have in an urban or suburban environment. There's discussions about sediment, the weirs, the actual engineering behind how you clean water as it transitions down this stair step of wetlands. And it's just so folks can kind of self-introduce themselves to the site by just traveling to there and to the location and walking around it. The other great thing is it's very close walking distance from a regional public library. And so the library has tuned into that, and they initiate some programming elements directly related to getting kids walking down into the wetland area with guided tours. We've participated in a couple that are really pretty entertaining because they have a mascot of the library. It's an owl, and the owl's name is Houdini, W-H-O, Houdini. And the kids go crazy for that. And then they learn plenty while they're walking around. They're exercising, they're getting fresh air, and they're hearing, you know, just tons of birds, you know, red-winged blackbirds chirping and birds flying over, and they can see sometimes snakes and all kinds of cool little critters. So really cool sight.
So I'm just thinking, for me, if I'm going to get a house, that's an amenity that I would absolutely go crazy for. This is something that you just don't see in an urban setting very often. And when you talk about red-winged blackbirds, you know, I was living in Philadelphia and Atlanta. And when I finally came back to the Midwest, and you know, after 10 years of not hearing a red wing, I mean, the first time I heard it, I froze. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, this is awesome. And to be able to have not just students and kids, but people of all ages to be able to experience that. And there's, for me, it was a sense of, you know, I remember it. I lost that feeling of actually being outside of a city. And when I heard it again, you know, all those emotions kind of rushed back in. And can you get any type of feeling from the community on just how important the Victory Wetland is?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So it's been special from the start. And you mentioned the homeowners, too. So in the beginning, that was a big part of it was, you know, the Five Mile Estates Homeowners Association was very interested in what could be done with this facility to make it, you know, unusual or different or better than a typical stormwater basin. But right from the get-go, the great thing about the Natural Resources Conservation Service and some of the other partners that participated was, you know, this thing was designed and engineered. But then when it comes to planting and getting plant materials on site, a lot of items were donated. There was a massive volunteer effort with the kids and with the neighbors and the community. So 600 trees and shrubs were planted, 13,000 wetland plants were planted in the beginning, 31 different species of trees, shrubs, grasses, and wetland plants were all planted from the get-go. So the community was engaged, and this is nearly 30 years ago. It was open to the public in 1997. So after all of this volunteer effort, and it was open to the public, ever since then, yeah, it just continues to grow, I think, in interest. And once we tell people about it, we've had, you know, national and regional conferences for water quality come through and integrate it as like a tour site if they're doing an offsite half day. Obviously, the library's been very good about sharing information about that facility nearby. The feedback from the community has been great, and it's caused us to also reinvest in it. We've upgraded signs, made them a little bit more flashy and appealing with some cool depictions of wildlife and you know, colorful signage that really attracts more people to the site. And of course, you got to take good care of it. You want to make sure it is something that people feel proud to visit and share with others. And so it takes, you know, Ada County Parks and Waterways staff in conjunction working with the Ada County Highway District for that sediment basin piece to make sure the community feels welcome and that it is a site for them.
I'm curious, from just a sustainability and a maintenance side of things, obviously the plant life there is doing a job for you, right? It's cleaning the water, it's helping sediment out particles and so forth. But at a certain point, does the basin start filling up with sediment and it has to be purged in a sense? And how do you maintain a system and keep a natural component to the system at the same time?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the great thing about the basin is it's sort of it's an easier to maintain piece, but that's primarily handled by the Ada County Highway District. That's sort of their lane of operation. And that's the front end piece. And that piece actually there's a fence surrounding it for safety, you know, so it's not as open to the public. There are signs identifying what's happening in that basin. You know, there's a sign that says bye-bye sediment, and it has a picture of a red-winged blackbird on it. And it talks about, you know, what that thing is doing, the basin is doing. You can walk directly around that and find this. So that does have to be cleaned out. We also have to maintain the weirs, the little drop structures between the shallow marshes, just to make sure they're functioning properly as trees grow into them. You know, roots can pull them up or bring them down. And then the other thing about maintaining a site is just the vegetation. It's very mature now, right? And so you actually want visual corridors into the site to see some of the features of it. It doesn't need to be totally protected for a habitat. It just, we want to open it up, give people a peek into what's happening there. And also at times we have to remove cattails and things from the shallow marshes because some folks that are listening probably know that those plants are soaking up organic phosphorus and pollutants. And over time, if they soak up too much and you get more plant material, they actually can put more phosphorus back in the system and discharge it downstream. So we actually have to harvest and remove those and make sure it's functioning properly.
That's interesting. And so you're in an urban environment and no surprise, Boise and Ada County is growing in population and for the foreseeable future is going to keep growing. It sounds like, you know, Victory Wetland is a thought through way of providing not only maintaining water services and the role that the natural system can have in cleaning the water and making sure the water quality is good as it's delivered down to the Boise, but also creating environments that are good for the people that are surrounding them, right? And so it feels like a win-win. As more people are coming into Ada County, what do you see as the way to maintain this sort of relationship with the natural water environments and the services that water brings?
Wow, that's really kind of a tough question. I mean, right. There's so many players involved in that. Yeah, right. I mean, I think you know as well as I do. I mean, out in Pocatello as well, I mean, there are a lot of different jurisdictions and agencies, from irrigation districts, drainage districts, there's neighborhood associations, highway districts, counties and cities, and you have all these players. I think the benefit is that the growth that we have in this community and the nature of the growth, I think we have learned from what we've done in the past correctly and maybe some of what we've done incorrectly. And so this site was intended to show what is possible. It functions as a functional wetland, but it also is a demonstration wetland. Like, okay, so perhaps you want to integrate more habitat into your subdivision. You know, certainly the powers that be that are approving of the developments that are being submitted for approval, I think those folks are very well engaged in, you know, habitat improvements, water quality improvement, now groundwater recharge. I mean, we have a system like this, slows down water, and you have so many people coming to the area, and there's a lot of concern about, you know, the shallow aquifer, the deep aquifer drying up. This is another way in which you can supplement groundwater recharge. You're holding it, you're retaining it for a period of time to allow for groundwater recharge. So I think it's easy to sell. I think sometimes it's harder to encourage developers on the front end to integrate them into the site without some prompting from some of the folks around that are agency related, that are thinking about these things rather than number of home lots or something. But thankfully, I think the community in Idaho generally is super supportive of open space, of habitat, natural areas, of public lands. Certainly, you know, it's a big deal in Idaho. And so it's just a small piece of that bigger puzzle, but it's definitely a challenge. I mean, there's a lot more houses being built than there are constructed wetlands for the public and for demonstration purposes right now.
But, you know, such a great example. Hey, have you ever thought about integrating a wetland in this community? No? Come over here and take a look. We've got the example for you. And it just starts with one, and there's going to be two and three and four, and then hopefully sooner than later, you've got all these developers. The first thing they think about is, where can we integrate the native landscape in this community project?
Yeah, and how does it add value? I think that's the key, is convincing them that there is a significant value to it. And as you mentioned earlier, it takes time in the front end for it to really, just like any park would, when you start a park, sort of the ugliest the park looks is the first day it's opened. It's the opposite for a house. The house looks, you know, beautiful the day it's constructed and open for somebody to, you know, live in it. But with a park, it's kind of rough around the edges to start. Once the plants start to, you know, gain some momentum and maturity, the site just gets better over time. And with proper maintenance, certainly you can make it better.
Yeah. And especially when we're working with natives, sometimes you have to have patience. It just doesn't happen overnight or within a year. And to be able to watch that growth over a 5-year period, it's amazing.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's actually extremely fun to revisit the site, and with groups that had been there in the past and things too. You know, we've had those experiences with younger kids that maybe went there on some sort of field trip, and then they end up working for an agency around us, you know, and they get a chance to revisit the site, and it's changed a lot. I mean, just the signage alone, and that there's a couple of resting benches that are, you know, just everything about it can look more appealing over time, especially with some good care and attention and a little bit of funding. They don't take a ton to maintain once they're built properly. So as long as you have a shepherd for the site that's really keeping tabs on it and taking care of it, that's really, you know, what helps people embrace this kind of idea. And I think that's what, you know, we've tried to do at Ada County Parks and Waterways, is just embrace it and give it the love and attention it deserves.
That's great. Have you ever seen a rock chuck there?
I knew there was going to be some sort of
the callback.
Yeah.
The callback. And are they stress-free?
The answer is no, not there. I've not seen a rock chuck, a yellow-bellied marmot. There's a lot of other really, really cool critters there, though. Tons of birds, lots of amphibians, and tons of insects. There's monarchs that come through there. It's just a really neat spot.
That's fantastic. Well, can you help us with our trivia question? When did the Victory Wetland open to the public?
So although it began as a project in 1995, it did not open to the public until 1997. So a lot of work went in for those couple of years. And then once all the volunteer planting efforts were completed, the public was welcome to the site, 1997.
Awesome. And thank you so much, Scott, for joining us today to talk about the Victory Wetlands. And for all who are listening, if you want to learn more about urban waterways in Ada County, please go to adacounty.id.gov/parks-and-waterways. Again, thank you so much, Scott.
Thank you for having me.
The Nature of Idaho receives support from listener contributions to KISU-FM. Shows are produced at KISU-FM in Pocatello at Idaho State University, with editing and production by Shelby McGovern and Mackenzie Young. Music is by Idaho's very own Sons of Bannock. Audio of this and past episodes of The Nature of Idaho can be found at kisu.org or from Spotify and other select podcast services. Send your thoughts and suggestions to noid-kisu@isu.edu.